You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
That Mac built. Yes, I built this house. For better or for worse. It is my construction. President's getting into John Bolton, as you might well expect. And then John Kelly gets involved. Yeah, we got a little like straight up soap opera going on as the White House turns. Yep. I got to read you the. If you haven't heard it, I got to read you. I got to read you the President's Trump. I mean, President's... I got to read you the President's tweet, all right? The... it's... how do... Okay. Let's see. Since I don't follow him... let's see. Real Donald Trump. Yeah, that's it, right? I think that's it. 45th President of the United States. All right, let's see what he has to say. Let's see. He talks about why didn't John Bolton complain about this nonsense a long time ago when he was very publicly terminated? He said, not that it matters, nothing. And then, hold on, the president, many more mistakes of judgment, gets fired because, frankly, if I listened to him, we would be in World War VI by now, and goes out and immediately writes a nasty and untrue book, all classified national security. Who would do this? For a guy who couldn't get approved for an ambassador to the UN years ago, couldn't get approved for anything since, begged me for a non-Senate-approved job, which I gave him, despite many saying, don't do it, sir. Takes a job, mistakenly says Libya model on TV, and and many more mistakes in judgment. They're out of sequence, right? So anyway, the president into John Bolton. Let's see. Reporting 200 Americans evacuated from Wuhan, China. And they're arriving in California. Landing at March Air Force Base in Riverside, where I assume they will undergo testing for the coronavirus outbreak. So the United States now evacuating people. Now, interestingly enough, John Kelly weighs in, right? So the president's got people in his inner circle. Yeah. So John Kelly's in Sarasota, Florida. I'm not exactly sure for what, but I'll find out. Former Trump White House Chief of Staff and United States Marine Corps General John Kelly speaks to members of the media before the Ringling College town hall audience on Monday, January 27th. Ringling College? Who does Kelly know down there? Never even heard of the place. Trump's former national security advisor should testify at Trump's impeachment trial, Kelly said. He supports calling witnesses. Blah, 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 blah. One of Trump's former top aides told the Sarasota audience Monday evening that if the reporting on what John Bolton wrote is accurate, he believes Bolton. If John Bolton says that in the book, I believe John Bolton, said John Kelly, who served as Trump's chief of staff for 18 months. Kelly spoke Monday at the Van Wensel Performing Arts Hall as part of the Ringling College Library Association Town Hall Lecture Series. What the hell? Every single time I was with him, he always gave the president the unvarnished truth, Kelly said of Bolton. I'm looking for more quotes. And more Kelly quotes. Here it is. Quote, I mean, half of Americans think this process is purely political and shouldn't be happening. But since it is happening, the majority of Americans would like to hear the whole story. So I think there are people who would contribute to this, either innocence or guilt. I think they should be heard. I think some of the conversations seem to me to be very inappropriate, but I wasn't there. But there are people who were there, and they ought to be heard. Kelly also said earlier in the day that the Ukraine aid should not have been held up. Quote, when the United States Congress gives the money to buy the equipment to give this particular country, to not send it over there as fast as we can is not the right answer, Kelly said. So there you have it. John Kelly getting involved. So expect him to get put on blast pretty soon. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that Donald Trump traffics selectively in the truth. Mac, did you just call him a liar? I kind of did, right? Is that a shock? The best healthcare ever in the world, right? It's going to be unbelievable. Maybe not, right? And everything that the president does, it's going to be unbelievable. It's going to be a great deal. the phone call to the Ukraine was perfect, right? Now, there's a lot of different ways you could describe that. But again, what's amazing, right? And again, I don't see him any different than I see Hillary Clinton. I don't see him any different than I see most politicians. I mean, it's the coin of the realm, lying. And then you never are fully reconciled to it, okay, because you don't put yourself in that situation. You do press conferences, and they ask you one question. You answer a different question. And you control the whole narrative as the president of the United States. And they do. And they do. So I don't see Donald Trump different from Bill Clinton, from Hillary Clinton, right? You know, the Bushes. I mean, it's again, now, but what you're talking about is how much they fabricate. And I think Donald Trump has fabricated just about most of his life. Okay. And then what happens is you never get forced to reconcile and you just move on to the next issue and the next fabrication. So it is the way it goes. And it's the way the game gets played. And he's, in my opinion, he's rewritten the way the presidency gets done. Notice, no more press conferences at the White House. He is the press conference. Also, what happened at the press conference was an attempt to reconcile what the president said with somebody who had to stand out there in front of it and dance for it, and attempt to make it make sense and make it reconcile with, you know, public policy or the fact that this senator said this, or actually the consensus of the reporting said this, but the president says this, right? So that little, you know, burr in our saddle, you know, was done away with. And so in my opinion, if you're the next president, and you don't learn from the way Donald Trump uses social media, then you didn't really pay attention. Because I will tell you what, if the economy, he'll survive the impeachment thing. Even if they call witnesses, it is not an impeachable offense what he did, right? So, you know, unseemly. But I'll tell you what, presidents and the Congress have been playing those kind of bullshit games forever. So, and I think most Americans see that. That's blatantly partisan and political. And the problem is the majority in the Senate isn't enough to keep witnesses, you know, out of there. And you have moderates who are listening to some of this stuff saying, you know what, what he did was wrong. So what happens? They call some witnesses. They hear testimony. The president is acquitted on the charges on the impeachment. You know, in the impeachment process, but the Senate adopts a resolution censuring his conduct in tying political aid or aid, period, to a political investigation of the Biden family. And let me tell you, somebody ought to check into the Biden shit too, right? And so that's the conundrum. Does allowing witnesses to include Hunter Biden, right, and going down that rabbit hole, which the Republicans will certainly require, okay, will doing that, does that destroy Joe Biden's campaign for presidency? Does that materially hinder his campaign for presidency? So that's the big game that's being played. The president at the White House right now, signing the newest version of NAFTA, right, called USMCA. So hopefully it's a good version. It's got USMC in it, right? So we hope that's good. some interesting stuff in the news. I got an email from Big Dave in Vacaville. So Dave yesterday emails me and says, and tells me that he's going to listen to a podcast. It's like a three-hour podcast with Eddie Gallagher. And the podcast is done by another SEAL. And so I said, I think the guy's a piece of shit. And I don't know that I'd devote 2 hours, but I'm curious to what you're going to find out. Let me know what you think. And he says, yeah, I agree with your assessment, but I'm kind of curious to hear, see what, you know. I said, the other thing I'm curious is, you know, is it, will it be a softball interview? Because normally, right, there's a reason that guy doesn't go on, you know, major news shows with real news people. You want to know why? Because they will begin to circle the wagons and pin him in using testimony, sworn statements, and whatnot. Did you do this? Did you do this? This guy all testify that you did this. Did you not do that? So they all perjure themselves. They all lie. Right? Is there a reason why they haven't been charged with perjury? So anyway, so what happens is you screen all these interviews, right? Well, could you send me the list of questions? And so anyhow, so let me read you what Dave wrote. Okay. This is Big Dave from Vacaville, the one who's pissed at Chris Cox for losing weight on vacation, right? Same guy. Anyway, good morning, Mac. After listening to the podcast, what struck me is Gallagher has an excuse for everything. He was not one to accept self-criticism nor shoulder responsibility. He points his finger at his teammates' shortcomings, their attitudes, lack of training, etc. But he is a stellar operator, of course. You, Mac, as a leader, have most likely been around numerous Marine leaders during your career who have never owned their screw-ups. Quick to point the finger at others, believe they are without faults and have a toxic personality and are shit leaders. Gallagher comes off as all of the above. His self-righteous attitude rubs me wrong, even without mentioning what he was charged with. Perhaps it's how SEALs are today, but I'm sure there are still some solid dudes in their community. Asking the question. When you get numerous SEALs testifying how toxic Gallagher was, dangerous among other descriptors, it's hard to believe they would come forward with such contempt if not warranted. In closing, yes, it was a soft interview. Of course it was. But you can still hear this guy for what he truly is. He can't cover and disguise his true colors for 3 hours without showing who he truly is. By the way, he's not that bright. Sad! Exclamation mark, Dave. So there's a review. I don't know if you saw I saw the headline, but I did not listen to it. I don't know that I would waste 3 hours of my life after what I've read about that dude and contribute. Right, to somebody's numbers and somebody. Now that I know how this business works, right? Clicks drive shit. Not my click. I'm selective with my click. I am not going to have my click be counted in that number, right? So anyhow, but there is a review for you. Let me tell you what's going to happen on the program today. There is, and the interview is very, very cool. There's an event going on at Camp Pendleton here in the next couple weeks. Okay. And it's going to be the last one of its kind because of the age of Iwo Jima veterans. There's a group at Camp Pendleton that has been putting on, it's called the Iwo Jima Commemorative Committee. Okay. Since the 90s, they have been putting on, right, annual reunions at Camp Pendleton of Iwo Jima veterans. I didn't know that, right? So anyway, last year, there's a picture of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 people pictured. There's a total of 30 that showed up. Of the 18 in the picture, 5 are in uniform. And, let's see. 2 are in dress blues. There's a Navy guy, 2 Navy guys in their Cracker Jack outfit, and another Navy guy in his Chiefs outfit. Yeah. How about that? And these are Iwo Jima veterans. So they will gather to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the battle that commenced. Marines went ashore on February 19th of 1945. And so, but this will be the last time they'll do it because of the dwindling numbers and the difficulty of travel and whatnot. So you're going to hear from Lieutenant Colonel Larry Rannell, Rannell, R-A-N-N-E-L, like Ran. Anyway, Larry's a former F-4 pilot in the Marine Corps. Got out, took a job at Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, and at one of his jobs at one point was to help facilitate this thing. And they built a monument at the All Ranks Club, Pacific Views All Ranks Club. You walk out kind of the patio area that overlooks the Pacific Ocean, and there's a couple of monuments there. And so so they'll gather for the 75th anniversary, and it will be the final one. And so you're going to hear Larry talk about his career in the Marine Corps, which is an interesting one. He's an RF pilot, RF-4 pilot, and spent 12 months doing photo reconnaissance in Vietnam, mostly in the southern one-third of North Vietnam, which would tell me that what are they looking for there? You know, SAM batteries, artillery batteries, and different things that are, you know, developments that will impact the DMZ and the northern part of I Corps. So anyway, you'll hear him talk about that, and then you know how he got involved in this reunion. You'll hear him talk about some of the cool experiences that he's had with Iwo Jima veterans, and so and again, the public's invited, and it, I would encourage, if you can get there, I would encourage you to go. These guys obviously don't consider themselves anything special, but in terms of Marine Corps history, that battle is in the pantheon of heroes, and it might be number one. I would say certainly that in the Chosin Reservoir. In terms of the history of the Marine Corps, when you think about, you know, heroic Marines and heroic events, all right, they're at the top of the list, in my opinion. So you'll hear from Larry here in a few minutes. So good morning to you on a Wednesday, hump day, the last one of the month of January, headed for February here, pretty quick. The United States Marine Corps Band makes today official. Good morning. And this is dedicated to all the Iwo Jima veterans in their 90s that are headed out to this event here in a couple weeks. 2 weeks, I think, starts 2 weeks from today. And God bless you all. Still at your age, making the effort to get out there and be together, and also to meet people like me and give us the opportunity to shake your hand and be in your company. So God bless you. Thank you for showing up at these things. God knows you don't need to. Or maybe you do. Maybe being in that company is because we all know that the memories don't go away, and being in that company is good stuff. So, with that said, this is dedicated to Iwo Jima Marines that'll gather at Camp Pendleton next week, and to everybody out there that's within earshot of Camp Pendleton, right? Make an effort to get there.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You gotta win.
All right, time to look at the weather in Marineland. Currently, it's cloudy and 42 in Quantico. Sun in 51. At Camp Lejeune, so cooled off down in North Carolina. 29 Palms, sunny and 53, so not bad. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, cloudy and 51. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy, 66. Okinawa down in the 50s, don't see that very often. Dark cloudy and 58. In the Helmand Province of Afghanistan, colder yet. Clear, dark, and 41. They'll get down into the 30s tonight. Yikes. In the Al Anbar province of Ramadi, it is clear, dark, and 53. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is sunny at 53. Same as Ramadi. Same as 29 Palms. 53 is the number today, baby. Yeah, don't know why. Looking for a high of 76 today, 75 tomorrow, and 81 on Friday. Boom! Yeah. And then headed to Las Vegas next week to do post-traumatic winning. I'm fired up about that. Yeah. Now, because it just dawned on me, shithole weather updates. Good morning from foggy Church Bridge, Saskatchewan. Overcast, winds out of the southeast at 2. Feels like 14 above. I'm sorry, air temperature 14 above feels like 10. For this afternoon, looking for a high of 23. Winds will be out of the south at 2. Nice. A nice picture of the hockey arena in Churchbridge from Chris Cox, who you heard yesterday on this program. He's in Webster, Massachusetts, his home. Picture of what looks like City Hall with a few monuments out in front of it. One dedicated to Corporal John G. Fleming, United States Marine Corps. Vietnam, 1968 to 1970. How many other states are a commonwealth? Answer below. I think, I knew Virginia was. Pennsylvania is a commonwealth. Massachusetts and Kentucky. What is a commonwealth? There you go. What is a commonwealth? A commonwealth refers to any group of people organized under a single government, particularly a republic. Nowadays, a commonwealth has come to mean any government in which all people involved have a say, or a loose formation of nations and a shared common loyalty. Okay. It means nothing. Okay. They're no different than anybody else. All right. Current temperatures in Webster, Massachusetts, 38 degrees, looking for a high of 37 today. Bright blue skies and a northeast wind at 8. Crisp, cool, and clear. Chris from Webster out. And from Nancy, happy hump day. Pleasantville, 28 degrees on the way to 35. Winds out of the northwest at 7, down to 18 overnight. And here's a picture of gray skies. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll do news headlines, more Ball Marine Radio coming up right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Yes, I promise.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed.
But for you veterans, listen up. The uniform is Bob Nilsen, former Marine.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families.
Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio.
I'm not sure what happened or why everything played at once, but I guess I will certainly investigate that. More of this program coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nilsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nilsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nilsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
The chef's not on. I just felt like playing this. Because it makes me happy. Probably because I associate this with the chef. Yeah, interesting stuff I saw yesterday. Dianne Feinstein, Democrat from California, said that it did not appear that there was the evidence to impeach the president. So I think you have there a pretty sober analysis by Dianne Feinstein, who's a Democrat, right? That kind of interesting in the news. All right, so to the news we go. Where do we start? I got to find the right thing. Here. Marines wanted for the service's new advertising campaign. right? The Marine Corps has put out a casting call for active duty and reserve Marines to participate in the service's latest recruiting campaign focused on boot camp transformation. Casting sessions will be held in February at two Marine Corps bases on the East and West Coast. The Marine Corps has said in an administrative message published on Friday, in order to ensure authenticity and accuracy, Marine Corps Recruiting Command has always utilized real Marines in its advertising, said the message, signed by Major General James W. Bierman, also known to his friends as Chip, who's the head of Marine Corps Recruiting Command, or MCRIC, as it's known. Let's see. One casting call will be held at the Conservation Law Enforcement Complex aboard Camp Lejeune on February 3rd and 4th. The West Coast casting call will be held at the Pacific Views Center, which is the club, at Camp Pendleton. Marines selected to be featured in the Marine Corps advertisements are exemplary ambassadors of the Marine Corps in public, said the message. No previous acting experience is necessary. So what are the qualifications? What's the message? The campaign, part of the Battles Won marketing strategy, looks at the transformation story of making Marines via recruit training. Yeah, I'm, you know what, I don't know that I've ever said this in public. And but I'll say it right now. I think the Marine Corps needs to change recruit training. Yeah, let me say that again, all right? Okay. The I know, right? People swerving. I think the Marine Corps needs to change recruit training. Okay. Principally, right, it needs to rethink the whole drill instructor thing. I know. What? Cars. I think that the way drill instructors are, and unless I'm mistaken, so maybe somebody could update me, right, I believe they contribute to kind of the Lord of the Flies mentality among junior Marines who don't understand that's a fake as fuck thing designed to do something very, very specific. I know. And it was invented in the industrial age, right? In the 1930s and 40s and 50s. Now it gets tweaked, but the fundamental approach is a mid 20th century approach. Like, I know that's the heresy record scratch. Okay. I don't think it works anymore. I think young people have changed drastically, and the Marine Corps needs to change. Now, I still believe, right, that our prototypical drill instructors, the way you get brought to, you know, Paris Island or MCRD, should not change, right? The way you're greeted and piled off the buses, I mean, that is steeped in history. But I think that very, very quickly has to morph to a different model. Because young people, the reason you can't haze young people today, they cannot take it. Okay? They did not grow up in two-parent families. They grew up in single-parent families. As a result, they were raised in daycares. They are not kids anchored solidly to the deck of the aircraft carrier. Okay? They are just not. And you've got to go to them, and you've got to move their cheese. And again, the problem, I believe, is that young Marines believe that's the way you lead, by screaming and yelling and doing that shit. And so one of the problems that you encounter is this brutal kind of Lord of the Flies thing that goes on inside barracks. Well, if you're a tough kid, you can get through that. But what happens if the average kid is not a tough kid anymore? What happens if the average kid is raised by a single parent, or maybe raised in a household where the mom has different men move in and out of her over the course of that kid's life, which happens now, or they're part of a single-parent family, then a mixed-parent family, and then the second marriage goes south, which, what, like 75% do, and now you're part of a single. I mean, there is so much turbulence in the lives of young people, and they come to organizations like the Marine Corps in much, much worse shape. And so at some point, right, you have to make concessions to that. You have to make concessions to that. And so that's what we're saying. That's what I'm saying anyway, is that I believe that there are better models. Now, what's the better model, Mac? Well, the one that I've seen and talked to people about is the Royal Marine model. And the Royal Marine model is you have these, you know, iron corporals, and they run their fire teams. And they are coaches, right? And they're mentors. They're not screamers and yellers, right? Right? And so to me, the Marine Corps needs to get there. And so what it's planning is this is the way a fire team leader leads a fire team. So instead of having staff sergeants, right, and the way we do it with all that craziness, right, I mean, there would still be limited amounts of that, right? So, I mean, I'm not throwing the model out completely because I think that stress level is part of what it is to be a Marine, and it's part of the rite of passage. But on the day-to-day operation stuff, you have these, you know, iron corporals like the Royal Marines do, very quietly saying, do this, do that, unscrew this, come here, let me show you this. And you're shown, right, how to be a Marine by somebody, you know, who knows. And in that way, you do two things. One, you make them Marines. Two, you set a example of what it is to be a fire team leader. And it isn't about screaming and yelling. It isn't about hazing. It's about helping somebody because we all know that, you know, we're only as strong as our weakest link. So I think today's, I honestly believe, and you know, as I go around, I talk to, you know, a lot of Marines, and, you know, they talk about being alienated. They talk about being not connected. And again, the Marine Corps has more suicide per 100,000 than any other branch of the service. Now, that may change. Okay, that may change because the Air Force's numbers, you know, doubled. So maybe the Marine Corps won't be the highest. So I'm not, you know, we'll see when that data comes out. And so I think it's important. And I think it's important. And I've kind of struggled, you know, with this. But the more I see two things happening, right? I see, you know, us not moving their cheese. Why is that? And then I constantly hear these stories about, you know, I felt so alienated. I felt so alone, you know, and we've got to move their cheese. And when you sit down and you begin to broaden the lens and say, okay, let's think about this. This approach was invented when? And General Berger made me think about it again. You know, these things pop into my head, right, as I have conversations. And then you keep having the same conversation. And you think, you know what, we're doing something wrong here. Because we have young Marines that they believe that's a quintessential role model for a leader. And they don't realize it's Disneyland. It's fake, phony as fuck. You can't lead people like that. You'll drive them crazy, right? But that's, you know, in the Lord of the Flies mentality where you don't have formations and the senior Marines aren't around junior Marines and the junior Marines are running their little Lord of the Flies shit, right? That's the, you know, the knife edge and the screaming and yelling and you're going to address me as senior Lance Corporal shit, right? And so so to me, I think it's time that the Marine Corps changed that. Yeah, how about that? Didn't expect to hear that this morning. So, again, I think that there's better ways to do it. And we don't have to sacrifice all of our traditions. We can still keep some of our images and some of the iconic ways we do things. But we can raise the quality of the example we set there, which I believe needs to change. We can set them up for more success in the future, as well as you're setting a huge example for junior Marines about what it is to be a leader on a daily basis. And that is your job as a coach, as a mentor, and you're helping people be better. You're not standing there screaming at them, shitting on them. Okay? And too much of that bleeds into the operating forces. Too much of that is bleeding into the operating forces. Let's see. All right, let me. Yeah, not sure how I got on that, but yeah. Next headline from Stars and Stripes: Duterte's. I always screw that guy's name up. Threat to end defense agreement could harm U.S. effort to deter China in the South China Sea, experts say. Now, this guy's been talking shit. It's almost like this is, you know, you have to view him now through the lens of the Middle East, which is do not listen to what he says, right? He needs the United States, you know, to, as a foil with China. And he constantly plays, you know, both ends against the middle. All right. In 2016, he began his term by insulting U.S. leaders and stating his intention to move closer to China and Russia. Last week, he threatened to terminate the visiting forces agreement that governs the deployment of U.S. troops to his country. The U.S. Embassy in Manila declined to comment on the issue on Monday. Did you notice, though, when they were fighting, I think, in Mindanao? Who was lending the most support? The United States. Who had special forces there? The United States. Who was flying air missions in support of that? The United States. So, anyway. And I will tell you this. The other thing that's interesting is you listen to members of the, you know, the Filipino parliament, you know, their Congress, and they're like, yeah, we're not going anywhere. Right? We're not going anywhere. And so, anyway, but he's a big talker. Now, I'll tell you what, there's a couple stories that are pretty interesting. And one of them is, hold on, let me find it. The Department of Defense Inspector General, inaccurate military surge sea lift fleet readiness reporting undercuts operational plans. Okay, so let me say that again because it's a mouthful, but think about this. Inaccurate military surge sea lift fleet readiness undercuts operational plans. So what they're saying is we have all those ships that are supposed to be part of the military sea lift command, right? That would be the naval component like, right, the military surge airlift command. We can take these things, right? We can dust them off. We can turn them on. You know, everything's lubricated and they are supposed to run. And all of a sudden you do it and only about 40% of it can get underway. That's a problem. Okay. Why the fuck are we spending all that money on all those ships if they can't get to sea? Now, this is DOD Inspector General shit, right? So it's not like, yeah, McNamara was walking around, right, on a military sea lift vessel, and he said it sucked. It ain't that, all right? Inaccurate surge sea lift readiness reporting misled geographic combatant commanders about their ability to quickly receive equipment resupplies, according to a DOD IG report. Military Sea Lift Command spent $742 million to maintain the nation's fleet of 50 surge sea lift ships between fiscal years 2016 and 2018. So that's 2016, 17, 18. That's 3 years. So 742 divided by 3 is 2. So like $230 billion, $240 billion a year. However, Military Sealift Command never verified whether its contractors accurately submitted reports detailing whether the nation's surge sealift ships were even mission ready, according to the IG report. Poor Military Sealift Command oversight. We're talking about close to $1 billion over 3 years. Unreliable readiness reporting and the downplaying of major deficiencies in the nation's military surge sea lift fleet likely resulted in geographic combatant commanders making inaccurate assumptions about their ability to receive resupply shipments of critical equipment, according to the report. The IG found numerous instances when contractors hired to maintain the ships in the surge fleet did not appropriately classify problems on the ships, including most severe Cat 4 casualty reports, which would result in the ship not being able to leave port. Wow. Quote, the Surge sea lift provides 90% of cargo space needed to meet operational plan requirements, according to the IG. For example, the inability of a single ship to perform its mission would result in an armored brigade combat team's equipment not being delivered when expected. Wow. According to the Congressional Budget Office's primer on military structure, an Army Armored Brigade combat team typically consists of 1,327 vehicles, including 87 tanks, 142 Bradleys, 66 armored personnel carriers, 18 Paladin howitzers, and 164 heavy expanded trucks. So, yeah, how about that? That's like having rusted infrastructure that when you lean on it collapses. That is not a good thing, boys and girls. So anyway, it's an article that like most people would look at and gloss over, but not here on All Marine Radio because we know what's up from down. Corporal sentenced to nearly 6 years in the brig for barrack shooting and the death of a South Carolina Marine. A Marine corporal based in Beaufort, South Carolina, accused of shooting and killing a fellow Marine in the barracks on April 19th, was found guilty on January 6th at a court-martial. Marine Corporal Spencer Daly, 21, of Youngstown, Ohio, was sentenced to 69 months confinement in the death of Corporal Tyler Wallingford. Daly was found guilty of willful discharging a firearm under circumstances to endanger human life and involuntary manslaughter. The Marine claimed that while drinking alcohol and playing a video game with the victim, he pointed his gun and accidentally shot the victim. Both Marine corporals were aircraft ordnance technicians on the F-35B training squadron at Beaufort, South Carolina. So, again, that's one of two, I believe, that happened in the space of 12 months. And the other one happened at Marine Barracks 8th and I, coming off post, ha, 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 blah, 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 grab the pistol, point it at one of your best friends and shoot him and kill him. Next story from the Associated Press. Nighttime mortar attack on the U.S. embassy in Baghdad injures one. Now, this is like classic Al Anbar shit, right? Rockets and mortars fired at night. Right, normally they land with a boom and don't hit anything. This evidently injured somebody. Here's an email. Hey, Mac, were you surprised when you heard that the helicopter that was carrying Kobe Bryant didn't have a ground sensor on it? You know, I'll tell you what, I was. Because when you heard F-18 man talking about it, Kurt Knowles, Rudy, call sign type, you know, and he was talking about, and he was talking about how refined the helicopters was. He said, and these things would of course have, you know, ground sensing, you know, radar and blah, blah, blah. And I said, does it give you enough time? He said, and his response was, yeah, right. It gives you enough time, right? Pull up, pull up, pull up, or terrain, 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 or whatever the warning you have programmed in there that gives you time to, you know, get out of, you know, wherever you're at, right? And the other, I think I saw another reporter heard something driving yesterday that said that he missed the top, getting over the top of the hill by 30 feet. Yeah. Yeah. But again, the other thing that struck me about when I heard that was, you know that you don't, you know that you don't have that on the airplane, and you're in that kind of fog. In fact, F-18 man just texted me. I was very shocked that it wasn't outfitted. Yeah. Ground proximity warning system, GPWS, as it's known. Yeah, I was, because of the way he said it, you know, Kurt said it, you know, just like on an assumption. Yeah, these, you know, these things are limousines, man. You know, and so really, the picture that gets painted, and Kurt said this also, you know, single pilot, right? feeling the pressure, maybe not from who he's delivering, but maybe his own internal pressure, because, you know, Kobe Bryant's other pilot said, he never pressured me to go anywhere. And when I told him I couldn't go, you know, I was disappointed, you know, but he never said shit, and his people never said shit to me, blah, 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 blah. They never complained, and they didn't ask for me because of that. And so, I heard that, and it made me think of what Kurt, not only what Kurt said, but the way he said it. All right. Interesting. Syrian troops captured town in the rebel held Idlib province. Okay. Syrian government forces captured one of the largest and most strategic rebel held towns in the country's northwest, the Syrian military and opposition activists said on Wednesday, as part of a Russian-backed military assault that has displaced hundreds of thousands of people fleeing to safer areas, right? Read Turkey. The town of Maret al-Numan in the Idlib province, which has been in rebel hands since 2012, sits on the highway linking Damascus with Aleppo and is considered critical to Bashar al-Assad's forces. The town is now largely empty as a result of intense bombardment in recent weeks. Its capture is the latest in a series of military triumphs for Assad. His forces have retaken control of most of the country from rebel fighters, largely because of blanket air support from Russia, which helped turn the tide in nearly 9 years of civil war. So Bashar Assad going to survive all of that. How about that? That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. That guy was on the ropes. That guy was on the ropes. Let me see. Stories in Marine Corps Times. I think they're going to be covered here. Top five stories in early bird, right? Number one, 50 service members diagnosed with TBI following Iran ballistic missile attack. Okay, I told you me and my ass clown friends were having a discussion about this. This is from the Associated Press. No, it's not. Sean Snow and Megan Myers. Sean Snow, former Marine. 50 service members now have been diagnosed with traumatic brain injury, or TBI, following a January 8th ballistic missile attack by Iran that struck two Iraqi military bases housing coalition troops, the Pentagon announced on Tuesday. The Pentagon said those figures could increase in the days ahead. The spokesman, Lieutenant Colonel Tom Campbell, said 31 of the 50 service members diagnosed with traumatic brain injury were treated in Iraq and returned to duty. So the number 19 is the number that got evacuated? 18 service members thus far have been transported to Germany for further evaluation. The Pentagon had initially reported zero casualties following the retaliatory missile strike. So 50 people have gone and complained of some issue. 31 were returned to active duty. And so that leaves 19. Not sure where 18 went to Germany. One went someplace else. Not sure. Email. Injured versus wounded. Hey, Mac, am I mistaken? Didn't we use the term wounded instead of injured for battle injuries? Over the past 15 years or so, I heard the media especially using the term injured with troops sustaining battle wounds instead of commonly used wounded. Nah, I've always wounded, right? And what happens, you know, is it's a wound to your brain. So we didn't have injured, right? We had non-combat related, you know, injuries. Yep. You know, trucks rolling over and you know, all kinds of crazy shit that happens. You know, people fracturing arms doing, you know, the Marine Corps martial arts program, you know, blowing out shoulders, on patrol, jump, you know, with all that weight that you carry on your upper body, your weapon, ammunition, water, whatever you're carrying, maybe a radio, maybe a compact metal detector, just all the shit Marines carry these days, right? And in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, we were in a lot of places where there's farming. And the safest path is through fields and across, jumping across irrigation ditches. Well, all of a sudden you have all that weight that is headed for your knee joint. And sometimes it doesn't work out well. And so medevacing Marines for, you know, some kind of knee injury. And then also, I mean, you would not believe the number of Marines we sent home for non-combat related martial arts injuries. Stupid. And then the worst part was that they wouldn't send you anybody to replace them. Sorry, not getting anybody. And you're like, man, this is brutal. I said, look, I wouldn't allow Marines to do that shit. Simply because there's too many. We medevaced them all the time. It was brutal. So anyway, and you need them. You need them to go work, right? Not do kung fu. And again, they're trying to do kung fu so they can get the next higher belt so they can get promoted. Right? We've got more important shit going on here. But anyway. Number two, Britain's Huawei decision frustrates American lawmakers. Story, why Britain's Huawei decision is frustrating Americans. The decision by the United Kingdom officials to allow the Chinese telecom giant Huawei to build parts of the country's 5G network has met with ire from members of Congress, as several members argued the decision will hurt relations between the two countries. I don't get it either. Senior U.S. officials have lobbied against allies to ban Huawei technology outright from their 5G networks. However, according to a statement from the British government, Huawei could build parts of the country's 5G infrastructure, but will be restricted from working on pieces of the network that are critical to security. Right. Yeah, we're just going to keep them there, and because they have access to the system, nothing else nefarious will happen. Quote, that's called whistling past the graveyard right there. Allowing Huawei to build the UK's 5G networks today is like allowing the KGB to build its telephone network during the Cold War, said Senator Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas, who's a former, he's an Afghan veteran and an infantry officer in the United States Army. Referring to the Soviet Security Agency, the Chinese will now have a foothold to conduct pervasive espionage on British society and has increased economic and political leverage over the United Kingdom. Those are statements of fact. Cotton, along with fellow Republicans Marco Rubio of Florida, John Cornyn of Texas, sent a genuine plea on January 24th to the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, arguing the British government to ban Huawei from 5G infrastructure. Senator Ben Stassi, Republican of Nebraska, said in a statement that the UK decision infected the intelligence sharing relationship between the Five Eyes, a group of close-knit allies that includes Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States. On January 27th, House Republicans introduced a bill that would curtail the intelligence the United States would share with the United Kingdom. Yeah, that's huge shit, right? Yeah, so anyway, that's big stuff. I mean, again, another infrastructure thing. We talked about the military sealift command not being mission capable. That's a big deal, man. That's a big deal, right? And here's another infrastructure event. You're going to allow the Chinese to do that. Here's another email about traumatic brain injuries. Mac, have you seen a map that shows where these impacts were? How close were they? I have not seen anything that describes how close the impacts were. So I can't tell you. I have no opinion on that. One more story. Special Operations has an entitlement problem. Here's how they intend to fix it. Now, this story ran, there was a bunch of stories that ran about a Special Operations, the unclassed version of a Special Operations investigation that was being conducted about all these different incidents, right? After news broke of the SEALs' ruckus 4th of July party, which had got them sent home, and the allegations of rape that came out of it, that's not in the article, that's for me, the head of Special Operations Command had had enough. He ordered an extensive review of the command, tasked with discovering what was rotting away the professionalism Special Operations had touted for decades. What they found, according to a 69-page report released on Tuesday, is that an obsession with tactical skill and deployments over everything has eroded leadership across the command. Coupled with an insidious sense of entitlement, the environment across SOCOM's components has fostered the rash of misconduct scandals that have plagued the organization over the last few years. Quote, knowing what is right requires a leadership presence and a commitment and an understanding, SOCOM boss General Richard Clark told reporters on Tuesday. And most importantly, training and leadership that is of those junior to them on those same things. There are 16 specific recommendations laid out in the report. But the larger issue will be changing a deep-seated and closely protected culture that values engagement of enemies in direct combat to the detriment of nearly all else. Sometimes character is not held in high regard as competence, and the two have to be linked. The breakdown in conduct can be traced to the operational tempo of units across the Special Operations Forces, according to the report. But the conclusion is not that operators are burnt out and thus lacking judgment. That's interesting. I would tell you that the op tempo might have something to do with it. The other thing is that we grew the Special Operations community, and people that would have never been allowed in it prior, right, were allowed into it. The article goes on. Rather, the hunger to close with and kill the enemy has overtaken not only the wide range of missions operators are trained for, but the organizational fortitude that is supposed to keep military units humming along regardless of their expertise. The report also does not mention behavioral health. However, Clark, and so we're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, TBI, even mild jolts from weapons training can affect judgment and impulse control. General Clark told Military Times that he hoped they aren't an excuse for unchecked misconduct. I want to see the recommendations. Some interesting stuff, some quotes, right? From the report, due to the aforementioned absent and misapplied leaders and senior non-commissioned officers, many junior officers and developing enlisted leaders struggle to grasp the fundamentals of the officer-enlisted relationship, mentorship practices, accountability, and discipline. And that hero worship of those salty veterans presents its own issues. Quote, in return, those who did deploy forward, specifically in some degree of combat, are held as almost infallible standard bearers for the rest of the organization to emulate. Seemingly, regardless of it, is a positive or negative standard. So the fact that you deployed, right, the fact that you deployed and saw combat means that everything you say is valid. And you know what? In my head, I hear General Zinni, General Mattis, General Van Riper, General Halick saying, look, if you're not a Marine, because you go forward doesn't make you a good Marine, right? You don't get fairy dusted. So anyway, right? At the same time, the review found that some members of the force are letting the special label go to their heads, starting with their first days in the military. That's why I don't believe you should. I think that they should pull special people from the rest of the population. I think SEALs should come from the Navy writ large. It should be their second enlistment. They should not come straight out of high school, blah, 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 blah. that pipe line should be rerouted. So you have people that have shown that they can do the Navy, they can be good sailors, and as a result, then they get pulled into the Special Operations Command. Because when you from the start, right? I mean, they're fucked in the head. The report goes on, quote, several soft career fields offer paths for direct accession and are segregated with other soft candidates during initial entry training. These programs possibly foster an unhealthy sense of entitlement as a result of special treatment and facilities. You can delete the word possibly from that sentence, and it would be more accurate. When a service member starts out a career with certain privileges, then grows up in an environment where operators are entitled to special health and fitness programs, special training facilities, even special grooming standards, the report found that separation from the conventional military experience can accompany a gap in leadership and accountability to match. To make matters worse, they found during that period, there can be such an obsession with running the fastest or doing the most pull-ups that professional development and an acculturation to military core values, tenets like honor, respect, humility, and so forth, can fall by the wayside. Take strike can from the sentence and insert do, and it would be more accurate. And then listen to this. There appears to be a, quote, lack of emphasis on professional development and personal maturity, according to the report. That's from the culture writ large. All of these factors have contributed to the brutal headlines in recent years. General Clark, when talking about Gallagher and Goldstein, two people that were pardoned, were granted clemency by the president in November, General Clark said, quote, he did not see the president as sending mixed messages to the troops. Quote, they know what is right. They know what the law of armed conflict is. They understand the rules of engagement and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. They're going to hold that up. The issues are not systemic, according to Marine Brigadier General Frank Donovan, but they are seen in every component of SOCOM. How the fuck can that be true? How can both those be true? When you see something that's as pervasive and then you say it's not systemic, let me tell you, and that is the boilerplate bullshit, Marine Brigadier General Frank Donovan. Right? Don't even know the dude, right? Probably taught him, though, right? How can you say that when you see it all over the place? General Donovan, quote, the junior elements of the force are looking for someone to step in a lot of ways. The problem is the middle level has kind of grown up in this environment. They're kind of struggling on how to reset themselves. Is that not a systemic problem? I guess that, it's a bad apples, bad basket phenomenon in many ways. So you're not chasing individuals, he said. You've got to identify why this is happening. Why are individuals allowed to act like this downrange? But it's not systemic in spite of the prevalence of the behavior. While it started as a culture and ethics review, Donovan said, he shifted gears after a few weeks in the field, finding that the real breakdown was in leadership and discipline and accountability. For the comprehensive review, SOCOM set up an advisory team of former soft personnel, DOD leadership, and academic subject matter experts to organize and analyze the results. Then they deployed a review team of currently serving troops, both soft and conventional, to do 55 one-week site visits to interview about 2,000 members of the organization, from junior enlisted to senior officers. While it started as a culture and ethics review, Donovan said, it shifted gears after a few weeks in the field, finding that the breakdown was in leadership, discipline, and accountability. And then he says, but it's not a systemic problem. It is the culmination of several reviews over the past few years, going back to 2018, both Army Special Operations Command and Naval Special Warfare Command have launched their own internal reviews after a spat of headlines featuring the criminal exploits of Special Forces soldiers and Navy SEALs. Quote, recent incidents in our formation have called our ethics and professionalism into question and threatened to undermine the trust bestowed on us by the American people and our senior leadership, said U.S. Army Special Operations Command boss Lieutenant General Francis Baudet. On top of those, Congress ordered two ethics and professionalism reviews, the most recent of which was submitted in March of 2019. The finding was that SOCOM units were up to oar on their training and education, but not publicly offering any details on what might need improving. More broadly, Special Operations Command had not done a truly expansive review since 2011, when they did a Preservation of the Force and Family report, which followed, among other incidents, a string of murdered special operations wives at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I'll cut to the chase, the last part of it. The last part, it says, but practically the success of this review will come down to cultural change. Quote, this is Cloney Clark. Are leaders actually willing to look at a soldier, sailor, airman, or marine and go, you're great. You've been great for the last 8 years, but you know what? You need a break. In practice, leaders often hesitate to deal with a problem, either because they're afraid of punching a hole in their formation and blowing their readiness for combat, or because they're afraid that misconduct in their formation will be a black mark on their career advancement. That's a cultural change of shared understanding that the chain of command sanctions. Clark shared a personal story and an Army specialist he once commanded, but who'd gotten into criminal trouble. Quote, he was well known, well thought of, had been in multiple deployments, but his character and what I had personally observed of him, but his leaders all said that the guy should deploy. This guy is so good in combat, we need him. I allowed him to deploy, and my gut said I shouldn't have. I allowed him to deploy, and he committed crimes. The National Defense Strategy, with its focus on near-peer competitions, could offer some relief, Clark added. Shifting priorities to training local forces, for instance, could take some of the shine off the counterterror mission. And what he's specifically talking is, you know, our special forces, you know, didn't used to be. When you said that, you thought of Green Berets, combined action stuff, training foreign countries. You didn't think of exclusively direct action, door kicking. And that's what we have now. Right. When you say special operations, that's what's like, yeah, I'm going to go kick doors. I'm going to shoot people. I'm going to be direct action guy. Okay. That didn't, and that's what Clark's referring to. The article finishes with this. And if push comes to shove, there's still the threat of punishment for leaders who drop the ball. Quote, leaders have been removed, he said. Leaders have been and will continue to be held accountable. You know what? It just doesn't sound like that, though. Right? It just doesn't sound like that. So let me tell you, the special operations community has a problem. Everybody knows it. Everybody in the DOD who's watched them operate knows they're reckless, right? Knows they commit crimes, and it's been going on for a long time. And if Special Operations Command, right, doesn't fix this now, that's not good. All right, it's 9:25. Holy shit. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear from you're going to hear an interesting interview, and it's based on reunion that's going to take place in 2 weeks at Camp Pendleton. Okay. And you're going to hear Larry Rannells. And he's a former Marine F-4 pilot. Started out as a backseat guy, transitioned to the front seat, became a pilot. Flew as a backseater in Vietnam and ultimately became a squadron commander, then got out. He went to work at Camp Pendleton. Larry's been working with this group of Iwo Jima veterans that gather annually at Camp Pendleton. Did not know that. And they will gather for the last time in 2 weeks. And so again, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. I promise you, don't touch that dial, okay?